This episode of Attention Talk Radio is brought to you by children and adults with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder.
Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station where we help those with ADHD pay attention to attention, with your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Copper.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Copper. Our topic tonight, strategies for success in ADHD relationships. Big shout out to TimeTimer, a longtime supporter of Attention Talk Radio. Go to their website at timetimer.com. They've got a great tool to help you with what I call clock math, which is a cognitive shortcut. Check it out today. We're going to get to the content in a moment. Before we do, we'd like to thank children and adults with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder for bringing this program to you. In celebration of that event, we're anxious to give away free digital copies of Attention Magazine. To get yours, just listen to our show. We'll be sharing a secret word a couple times. Write it down. Listen to another show and write down the secret word of that show, and then just email me the two words. That's all you need to do. Email address is attention@attentiontalkradio.com. When we get it, we'll forward it to Chad. We'll get you a PDF copy of the current edition of Attention Magazine, and they'll send you a PDF copy of the next edition when it's in print. We have a little tip that we're going to share with you that Chad made, and we'll get into the show.
When you have ADHD, putting in an 8-hour workday while maintaining maximum concentration can be a challenge. Here are some strategies to help. Make your physical environment less distracting. Use your laptop, smartphone, or alarm to track appointments and deadlines. Break up long tasks into shorter ones. Take breaks and walk around. Before you leave work, take 5 minutes to organize your work area for the next day. To learn more about workplace issues, visit chad.org.
Thank you so much, Chad, for your continued support. For those that are not aware, Chad is the largest not-for-profit organization that advocates on behalf of those with ADHD. We encourage all of our listeners to either donate or become members to support Chad. Financial stability is really important for them to have the resources to have people lobbying on Capitol Hill for the ADHD community and working with different regulatory agencies on wording to make sure that those with ADHD get the accommodations that they need in order to thrive. Again, for more information, to donate, or to become a member, go to chadd.org.
So, Jan, can you introduce our guest?
Jeff, our guest today is Melissa Orlov. Melissa is an expert on how ADHD impacts relationships. She's the award-winning author of The ADHD Effect on Marriage and The Couple's Guide to Thriving with ADHD, written with Nancy Kohlenberger. As a marriage consultant, Melissa helps ADHD-affected couples rebalance their relationships, and she teaches professionals about effective marriage therapy for couples impacted by ADHD. Melissa blogs for Psychology Today and for ADHDmarriage.com, where she hosts an online forum about ADHD and relationships. She's been interviewed by the New York Times, CNN, CBS, the American Psychological Association Monitor, and more. Melissa is a cum laude graduate of Harvard College. And Jeff, we're very pleased to have Melissa with us today.
Melissa, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be on.
I'm so excited about this. Last time we connected was the last Chad conference, and we shot a couple videos that were airing on Attention Talk Video that were really cool, and I'm excited because we're going to shoot some more that I hope we'll release this summer on a lot of more specific topics, which was a great learning experience for me and a lot of fun for me. I hope it was for you.
I had a great time, actually. I really enjoyed that, and I'm looking forward to doing those interviews with you, so it'll be great.
It will be. Your book, I was kind of flipping through it, and I got to tell you, I just love this. There's a lot of reviews here were written. Ned Hollowell, Craig Sherman, Zoe Kessler, Nancy Rady, all have been guests on our show before. Jennifer Koretsky, who's there, but also Ari Tuckman wrote your foreword, and I love the first line that he wrote. I sometimes say that when one person in a couple has ADHD, then both parties kind of have it too because it affects both of them, which I love that kind of statement because I think it's so key. We also did an interview with Rick Green and Ava Green a while ago called I, We, She Plus ADHD, which I think kind of speaks to that. So I guess I want to kind of begin things by saying, Melissa, what inspired you to write this book? How did it all come about?
Well, so this the first book was inspired by my own situation and then learning a lot more about ADHD and relationships. And in the intervening time, I've done so much work in the area. And one of the things that I do is I have these seminars that I give by phone. I've been doing this for a number of years now. And the emotional content, the questions and answers that come out of those seminars was really required creating the next book, which is all about emotions and how you handle the difficult emotions and the repetitive nature of these relationships. So I really was inspired actually by the people that I work with to write this particular book.
And you reference many stories or parts of stories in the book related to some of these. Is that accurate?
Yes. Well, so one of the things that I do as part of the seminar is I encourage people to send me questions. So I answer them live, but I also, there are more than I can do that with. So they send them to me written, and then I write back. I do these long Q&A written pieces. And so these were, almost all of them were questions that were written in the course to me that people were struggling with as they were thinking about how to improve their relationship.
So it's kind of in a weird kind of way, what I'm hearing you say is the content of this book was revealed to you by your experience in working with these people.
Yes, exactly. So because these emotions are... one of the experiences that you have when you take a seminar with a whole bunch of other people is you realize that you're not alone and that a lot of other people are experiencing the same thing. And so I, as these questions came up over and over again, I said, gee, this is something that a lot of people would like to hear about. And it's very reassuring, actually, to understand that you're not crazy. a lot of other people have these issues. So.
Well, the first part of your book starts with couples' emotions and ADHD, and as I've been interviewing experts, I'm beginning to learn or see ADHD more as a self-regulation issue, not so much one of a deficit of attention. In the context of self-regulation, you have to regulate your attention and your emotions. And so I'm kind of curious on your thoughts on this, because to me, regulating emotions is as much a part of ADHD as attention. So you have that piece of it. Then you have the emotion of a relationship. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, yes. Actually, it's interesting. So there's some research that's coming out this year that has had one of these pre-publication things that talks about emotional lability and how, in fact, a recent study suggests that the emotionality that you're talking about is actually a core feature of ADHD. It's actually a genetically linked feature. And so that's very real. And it is, of course, an impact in these relationships where not only do you have these repetitive symptom, response kinds of chains of events that lead to certain kinds of emotional behaviors and responses and misinterpretations and stuff, but you also have at least one partner who is unpredictably emotional because of the ADHD emotional lability things. And so regulating that is critically important, but sometimes it takes a while to realize just how important it is, and you're more likely to blame your partner. Well, if you hadn't gotten mad at me, I wouldn't have gotten mad back, or whatever. So there's a lot to learn for these couples about what's really going on in their relationship and impacting the emotional tenor of the relationship.
You compressed about a week's worth of brilliance into a couple sentences right there. So you mind if we just kind of slow down and just touch base on a few things there? Is that all right?
Sure.
I forget what you call it. There's something, and then there's response.
So symptom, response. So actually you and I talked about this a little bit, and we just touched on it briefly in that video that we just did. And so what that is that there will be an ADHD symptom that shows up, and it's particularly difficult if you don't know the ADHD is there, right? These are most adults don't know they have it when they enter their relationship, and so you misinterpret distractibility, for example. So the symptom is distractibility, and then the partner's response to that distractibility is they feel angry or that they're not being paid attention to, or they feel lonely, when in fact, and they think that their partner doesn't love them, right? So that's a misinterpretation of a symptom. But the response is a negative response. And then the ADD partner goes and responds to the response. So you get the symptom, which is neutral in nature. You get a negative response, typically out of misinterpretation or something like that. And then you get a negative response to the negative response. It turns into a downward spiral of emotions. And the longer it goes on, the more negative and the faster the couple goes into that cycle.
And when I, what I've learned from you, one of the keys is to actually understand ADHD and get an education on it. Because if you begin to understand it, you can go back to the source, and that is the symptom. And if the symptom is just a symptom, and the partner is responding to that, misinterpreting, they don't realize this. It's not their heart. It's not personal. It's just genetic, or I don't know the right word. It just kind of happens. And you understand that, you can kind of circumvent this symptom response negative spiral by taking the emotion out of it and begin to manage it, because it's not personal. It's just the ADD. Is that?
Yeah. Well, so you have two things going on. You definitely need to get the education about it, because once you can properly interpret it, there are many instances where, for example, if you're chronically distracted, one of the things you can do is respond to that and say, "Oh, gee, you're particularly distracted right now. How about if we go out for a date?" Right? That's a lot more positive response than, "Why do you never pay attention to me? I can't believe you don't love me." So you can, in fact, by correctly interpreting what's going on, learn how to deal with it. What you have to be careful about is not to use that and say, okay, well, your response should always be positive to my symptomatic behavior, because there are certain, you don't want to have a completely distracted partner all the time, right? So that's hurtful. So there's both partners have a role to play to make the interaction be more positive.
Excellent. Listen, we need to run to a break real quick. I want to kind of pick up on this when we come back. But everybody, if you're interested in learning more about Melissa, and you need to get her book, go to ADHDmarriages.com. And Melissa, can they get your first book, The ADHD Effect on Marriage, from that website as well?
Yes, you can get them both. Actually, it's ADHDmarriage.com with no S. So
not yes. Or you can just Google Melissa Orlov and ADHD, and I'm sure you're going to come up on that. So with that, we'll be back after these messages.
Our secret word tonight is success.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Are you always late? The Time Timer is an award-winning time management solution that's helped millions of people with ADHD manage life better. As time passes, Time Timer's bright red disc disappears. Visit timetimer.com and use the discount code ATR for 15% off.
Are you a parent of a child, teen, or young adult with ADHD? If you're like us, you're always looking for something you can do that will really help your kids. Impact Parents gives you the tools with guidance, so you can empower your kids so they can learn to manage their own lives. For confidence in parenting and peace in your home, download a free guide with 12 key coaching tools. Go to impactparents.com/parentADHD for the guidance you've been seeking. That's impactparents.com/parentADHD. Start making things better for your family today.
Transform lives as a professionally trained ADHD coach at the ADD Coach Academy. ADHD coaching is in demand, a calling, and a career. Learn how you can change lives by going to addca.com/ATR. That's addca.com/ATR.
Managing ADHD is about pausing before you ponder and proceed. This opportunity to practice pausing is being brought to you by digcoaching.com.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Melissa, welcome back from the break.
Thank you.
It's funny how the internet's just kind of crazy. It doesn't always work the way it's supposed to. Before the break, we were talking about your book and why you wrote it and stuff like that, and we were talking a little bit about the emotions. But this is Attention Talk Radio, and we focus on paying attention to attention. And in your book, you start off with emotions and stuff in diagnosis and treatment. I think it's important to understand what ADHD is all about. But then you start going to, I think the section is called Tomato Tomato, Overcoming Communication Issues, which goes right to the core of what I like to talk about, and that's what both parties pay attention to. And what I'm hearing is sometimes things are kind of misinterpreted, both literally and kind of cognitively. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Right. So, well, so one of these areas, this book is arranged by hotspot, and so I identified themes and then talked about those themes. So one of the early ones in there is this hotspot, this emotional area of feeling unloved, which is this direct result of the symptom response thing that we were just talking about and the symptom of distraction. And so when you start to pay attention to that, you can do a whole bunch of things. So there's this concept that I talk about in this book called attending to your partner. So it's not just paying attention to your partner. It's actually paying a certain kind of attention to your partner, which is romantic or supportive and warm, right? Because there are lots of different kinds of attention. Anger is one form of attention, but that's not mm-hmm. what's going to help you thrive. So there are different kinds of attention, and the treatment for ADHD helps support that ADHD partner's ability to attend. And then certain ways to better interpret ADHD symptoms, learning communication strategies help the non-ADHD partner also better attend, right? This isn't just about the ADHD partner. It's about both partners. Mm-hmm. Being able to better put themselves into the relationship.
We did a video, I believe we did a video, on the learning conversation. You remember that?
That was a while ago.
It was. I think it's being released next week or something. Anyway, I lose track of all that kind of stuff. But it was interesting because what you're talking about, the communication, and a learning conversation is a structured conversation to bring some stuff. And I think it's a structure and a way of walk through in something to kind of manage those misinterpretations, to bring everybody together on the same page so that we're all paying attention to the same thing. Is that an accurate assessment?
Yeah, exactly. And it's structured because you want to slow the conversation down. A lot of communication happens in sort of silently, actually, in mm-hmm. terms of the assumptions that you make about your partner's motivation. And that's a particularly sticky place for ADD, non-ADD couples because they don't always understand the other person's way of being, essentially, and their motivation. So you make bad interpretations. So a learning conversation gets not only at what the topic is, but it gets underneath it to help understand whether or not you're actually there's hidden stuff that is actually getting in your way of being able to resolve things.
Well, after we shot the video on that, it reminded me back in the old days when I used to coach masters. I was a master swim coach, and adults would come to me and they wanted to learn how to swim butterfly. And there's two kicks in butterfly, one at the front of the pool and one at your back of the pool. And it's a very timing thing, and if you don't have both of them, it's very difficult. And I remember one of the things I used to do is have them swim and kick dolphin kick twice and then do the pull. And they would do that drill for a while where their hands were out in front of them. So it was a very structured type thing. And then what would happen is I'd say, okay, now I don't want you to kick twice. I want you to start to rush your stroke. And the reason I would do that is I would condition them to a little bit for those two strokes. And then when I said rush it, the second kick would actually slide back into their stroke right where they needed it. And when I think of the conversation thing that you discussed about, it reminded me of that metaphor. As you do it for a period of time, it's kind of mechanical, or I would think it's mechanical, but as time goes on, it begins to become more natural and slides back in. Is that a reasonable metaphor, or am I misinterpreting things?
Yeah, no, I think it is. So you, what it does is it helps create a safe environment for you to talk. Mm-hmm. Because it's really, really hard to escalate one of these conversations into an argument. And so once you have practiced that a number of different times, you learn some skills that you then, maybe you don't have to say, okay, let's have a learning conversation right now. You just start to use those same techniques, hopefully, in your relationship and be able to slow down your conversation somewhat and investigate what's underneath what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
So, yeah, that's a good analogy.
Coach training, when you go to learn how to be like an ADHD coach, they teach you all this stuff, and you kind of go through, and it's kind of it's not a linear process, but they teach it linear because they have to have some way of structure. But it's kind of weird. You go through the whole process, and you graduate, and they say, now forget all the rules. Because the structures kind of help you kind of get what's kind of going on. But after that, it's a complete dance, and you're kind of running off intuition, but you got to understand those fundamentals. So, again, I think this book is chock full of these types of things where you're laying this stuff out, and you give some practical guides for the couple to kind of walk their way through it a little bit. Let's talk about – actually, let me look at time. We're probably going to have to kind of break this up a little bit. Let's talk about the parent-child relationship for a little bit. Can you speak to that?
Sure. So the parent-child dynamic is in almost every couple I've ever run into, that at least by the time people find me, they're usually well in it. And the parent figure is typically a non-ADD partner who feels out of control in the relationship and therefore tries to take more control to keep his or her life from sort of blowing apart. And the person who's playing the childlike role, the person who has less authority in the relationship or who is seen to be inconsistent or undependable is typically the ADHD partner. And it's a very, very negative interaction. It just ruins relationships because it makes you uneven. You're no longer really partners. You have a dictator and a person who's underneath, and it ruins your sex life, everything. It's terrible.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of curious that when I'm in my work, I mean, I don't do a lot of direct stuff that you do, but whenever you're coaching, somehow a relationship always kind of comes into it, and quite frankly, a lot of times spouses will come up into it. And it was pointed out to me one time that opposites attract. If most marriages, on one side you have a person that's more logical and more methodical, on one side they're more feeling and more insightful, if you will, and it's kind of like a teeter-totter. If you've got somebody 10% on the fulcrum on one side, they attract somebody about 10% on the other. But if they're way on the end on one side, they tend to attract somebody on the other. In this particular presentation I saw, they started throwing pictures up like Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, like which one's the feeling one and which one's more more logical. And then they put Princess Charles and Lady Diana upstairs up on the screen. And in my experience, so often it's very much like that, where the ADD is more of the maybe feeling impulsive, and they've married kind of their counterbalance. Can you speak to that a little bit?
I think that's right. And there's a great energy when you meet a good counterbalance, and that energy can continue into the relationship. Where you get in trouble. So it's one thing to be organized, and it's another thing to be taking over the other person's responsibilities for them,
mm-hmm.
because you
yep.
don't feel that they're competent, right? And that's mm-hmm. what happens when you get into the parent-child dynamic, is that the parent figure in that dual personality, that person starts to feel as if they are that they must be in charge, they have no other choice
mm-hmm.
because their partner isn't. And that's a very diminishing posture for that partner. So that's quite different from being organized. You can be organized and still be a partner by coordinating with your partner rather than dictating to your partner or taking over.
Very well said. Okay, so before we go to the break, everybody, if you you want to learn more about Melissa, you want her books, go to ADHDmarriage.com. There's no S on it, like I said before, but it's ADHDmarriage.com. And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Our secret word tonight is success.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Change your life by learning more about managing ADHD. Other places give you a few tips. The ADD Coach Academy will change your life. To find out more, go to addca.com/ATR. That's addca.com/ATR.
Are you always late? The Time Timer is an award-winning time management solution that's helped millions of people with ADHD manage life better. As time passes, Time Timer's bright red disc disappears. Visit timetimer.com and use the discount code ATR for 15% off.
Could hiring an attention coach really help you move forward? Does a child get wet when they dive into a swimming pool? You can get started moving forward today. Just call DIG Coaching Practice at 813-837-8084 and schedule a free consultation. Tell us you heard about us on Attention Talk Radio and get 50% off your discovery session. For more information, visit digcoaching.com. Don't delay, do it today. And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We're here with Melissa Orlov. We're having a great conversation. Melissa, we were talking before the break about a little bit of opposites attract to a certain extent, and I heard you say one time divorce rates, when people get married with ADHD, in the early years, the divorce rates between those with ADHD and those not are almost indistinguishable. But as you go further out, let's say 20 years, they become vastly different. Is that correct?
Yeah. So if you just look at the research on marriage and ADHD, or divorce, actually, it's mixed. But then when you look more closely, the reason it's mixed is because younger folks, as you say, don't have the accelerated divorce rate, but the folks who are older do. And it makes total sense because the ADHD symptomatic behavior is repetitive, and for most of these people, since 90% of adults who have ADHD are currently undiagnosed, the vast majority of these people do not know they have ADD, and so they can't change the symptomatic behavior because they don't know they need to. So it just builds up this frustration, the symptom response spiral builds up, and things get worse and worse, and finally people, after they try and try and can't figure out, give up.
I'm interested in your thoughts because when I'm coaching people like they've been married for a couple years, as I describe, when you get together, there's the romance side, the fun, da-da-da-da. But there's also the business side of the relationship, and that's the logistics. And I know that all too well because I have kids, and logistics are, you know, packing, getting everybody off to where they're supposed to be and stuff like that. And early in a relationship, it's relatively simple, and the romance is there, and it's kind of creative and spontaneous. But as you go on, particularly with kids, the complexity and the logistics become a bigger part of it and almost kind of squeezes out the intimacy part of it. And it's funny because I'll coach some people all too often that are maybe into the relationship with some kids, and I'll begin to ask them, what is it that attracted you to the other person, or what is it that about you that attracted them to you? And it's funny because I ask that question, it's not that linear. I don't ask that question. Coaching is like making sausage. It's a little bit of a mess, but you kind of get to where you want to go. But it's interesting to me because usually they end up going, it's actually the ADD is kind of what attracted them to begin with. But now dynamics of the relationship has changed for the more, less of the romantic and more to the business, and it's kind of creating some problems. I'm just kind of curious, do you see any of that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, in my own relationship, I mean, it is not only is it wonderfully exciting to date somebody who's got ADD, but there's a huge amount of typically, I mean, again, you know, I'm making some gross generalizations here, but typically there's a lot of energy, either physical energy or mental energy with, you know, creativity and ability to be distracted by lots of things is very positive. Until you're trying to get from point A to point B in a set amount of time or very efficiently. And that often happens, just as you're suggesting, when people have kids. Before that, most couples or many couples don't have problems, but the kids really put pressure of all sorts on the logistical side of the relationship, and that's typically not as strong for people who have ADHD. And their partners want them to step up and be really organized just at a point when they're not getting enough sleep and there's more stress and things are starting to become less organized because of what's happening in their lives. So usually a difficult time.
Yeah, so I'm dyslexic and learning this. I have ADHD, but I can tell you, let me paint a picture of what my world looks like right now. I was at the ADHD Coaches Organization conference, and for some stupid reason, I took the red eye back, so I didn't get in until Monday morning, which happened to be my younger son's birthday that particular day, which, by the way, last weekend was State Cup for soccer. He was in Florida. He's a very good soccer player. For those a couple weeks ago, I was in Dallas for Dallas Cup. So they make it from the Sweet 16 to the Final Four, so he's all excited. But I come home, and I got to deal with his birthday. The second night, is I'm still trying to catch up on business, and I'm behind on sleep, and my older son has got the regional volleyball championships in the state of Florida, which I go to, and they won. They're going to states this weekend, so that's kind of going on. And I got the radio show tonight where my younger son has actually got to be somewhere for tryouts for the next season. And this weekend I've got a rib cooking contest for a couple hundred people, and my wife is off on some business type of stuff. And scooting back, last weekend I was gone, and the weekend before that I was in Dallas for 2 weekends with my son, and there's no laundry that's done. There's no, it's chaos around here right now. And that's just, by the way, my older son is also getting ready to graduate, so he's got AP exams this week that he's getting ready to finish up, and we're moving towards him getting through the whole graduation stuff with all the extra baccalaureates and all the parties and da-da-da-da, and then the summer he's actually decided he wants to go to summer school early, so he's moving away. So I got to tell you, it's exhausting me, and when you start, if you have ADHD in a young family, you begin to think about all that type of stuff, and I got a 12-year-old and 18-year-old, you can begin to understand what we're talking about, the business, the relationship, because it's all about logistics. I mean, it's a UPS place in our house. It's all about coming in and cross-docking and kind of going.
Yeah, and not only that, I mean, the other issue that you have, not only do you have a huge logistical load, but you also, when the kids are young, which is when you're first starting to adjust to it, you also have safety issues. And so if you're exhausted and you have, potential safety problems, I mean, it's just a huge stressor, which doesn't mean that you shouldn't have kids, certainly, but it does mean that if you're going to be starting to work on the ADHD stuff, don't leave it until after you have the kids. If you know about it, you should try to get yourself into some good structures and systems and things before you have your first kid, if you can. Because that will help you immensely. And even so, as you point out, it's just really tough to balance all that stuff.
Everybody stop. What she said was very powerful. If you think you want to have kids, it's not that you shouldn't have kids. It's a very fulfilling and robust experience. But going into it, you need to do your homework and know it and start to build the structures. I actually was coaching a woman a couple months ago where we started talking about how it's not going to be the June Cleaver kind of household, and we started talking about simplification, and it was kind of cool because she was so gravitating to it because she had the expectation that she was going to do it different. In other words, she changed her mindset going into it, so she's open to a different way, and I think that's really, really powerful.
Yeah.
I want to kind of start wrapping things up a little bit, but there's a few things that I want to kind of bring out. First of all, Melissa, you're a marriage consultant, and I think it's unique in this field. I've never heard of one until I talked to you. It was always therapists and counselors and stuff like that. And I think that stands out to me that you're a consultant, but also you got into this field. You don't have ADHD, but you're in that relationship, so you're the non-ADHD partner, which to me is really pretty powerful that you've had a calling for this. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, so the consultant thing is both because that's my business background, is that I was a consultant for many years, and so that's a very natural role for me to think through things the way a consultant would. But I got into this because my husband and I struggled greatly. And we finally made it through, though almost didn't make it through, but we finally did. And I was working with Ned Halliwell at the time. And I said, gee, there are an awful lot of people out there who would benefit from knowing this information. And so that's why I started blogging about it, and it just took off. So then I worked on it, broadened it out a whole lot more and did the books and et cetera. So it was really, it's been a labor of love. And I have to say, extremely wonderful to work with all of these couples and help them refind the love that they really had lost in their relationship. It's incredibly fulfilling to know that you've been able to impact people in a very positive way. So I really enjoy the work quite a lot.
Well, I asked you that question specifically because many times I think people are like, well, they got ADD, and so if you're in an ADHD relationship and you're kind of going there and like, okay, I'm dealing with an ADD consultant, so it's all about me kind of understanding that world, but no, you're on that side, and I think that brings a little bit of credibility to you just in – if you're coming into it, like, this person doesn't have ADD. She lived it, almost didn't make it, but actually kind of did. So I think that there's something that's really powerful there about you and what you put together. I'll ask you about any other final thoughts, but as we kind of go into this and wrapping it up, who would be the, in terms of who's your right audience, who would get the most out of your book?
Well, so I'm actually, maybe because I don't have ADD, or I'm not sure, but anyway, I try to be extremely even-handed, so because I have a very strong belief and also observe that it is never one person who is responsible for either the damage that's done to a relationship or the repair that needs to be done to the relationship. So my book is really targeted, all of my work is targeted to ADHD adults and their partners, non-ADHD or ADHD partners, and any family members like parents or siblings or whatever who need to understand better what's been going on in that relationship. So it's a pretty broad audience. It's pretty much anybody who's interested in the topic, and then I spend time talking to both partners about what they need to work on.
I know myself, when I'm marketing myself, I call myself an ADHD coach because that's what people are looking for. But at the end of the day, I'm really an attention coach because I think that more represents what I'm doing. And the principles of coaching, at least from my perspective, apply kind of across the board. Understanding ADHD helps you pay attention to the right thing. It goes back to that symptom response. If you begin to understand how ADHD manifests, then it kind of helps you remove the emotion and kind of manage that a little bit. So to me, I almost think that this book is for ADHD couples, but I got to believe a lot of the principles here are probably applicable to couples that don't actually have ADHD. Am I representing that, or is that a fair assessment?
No, you're exactly right, and in fact, I hear that a lot. There is some ADHD specific stuff in here, which is appropriate, but there's also a lot of just really good relationship advice because for example, when you're really struggling and you've been angry with each other for quite a while, which many of the couples I work with have been, you stop doing some of the basics like being respectful to your partner, and it's really hard to have a great relationship if you're not respectful to each other. So that's not specific to ADHD, but it is a critical element of having a healthy relationship. So there's a lot of that as well.
All right. So, Melissa, help me with this one because I want to – before this call, we talked about something that I've learned from you. It's very, very powerful, and I don't want to misrepresent this, but that I'm all about the aha. It's all about, wow. It's like that's the nugget. That's the trick. That's what turns the ship a little bit. And when I've had some friends and I've coached some people, and I think when their marriage is difficult and they start to go seek help, it's almost like that person, we're going to go seek help as if the person that's is going to validate what I'm saying, it's all my partner's fault. And I got training with Melissa, so help me out here, okay? So if I'm getting off course, let me know. And I think that mindset, from what I've learned from you, is very, very difficult because if you're going into seek help as if they're going to change the other person, I don't know if that's really very counterproductive. It's when you turn and realize that I've got to deal with the symptom, sensory response on my side or the ADHD on the other side, so both parties have something that they need to work on, and you turn internally, jointly. I don't think this works if just one person does it. But if both parties turn inside and focus in on themselves, that's kind of the aha. So can you clarify this, make sure I don't misrepresent this?
No, you're right, and I'm smiling. You can't see it, but there's probably not a couple that's gone to any kind of couples therapy who didn't enter therapy saying, okay, so fix my partner, please. You know, that's the way people do it because they understand their own side of things, even if they don't understand their partners. But you really do. So you cannot. What you come to learn as you work through a lot of this is that you cannot change your partner. You can ask your partner to change him or herself, but you cannot do it yourself. And this is something that is hard to learn for all of us. So what ends up happening is the only option you have is to, in fact, change yourself. But if only one person in the relationship does that. So if you say, okay, great, I'm going to change myself like I did, Melissa did in her own relationship, it still doesn't move forward and thrive unless the other person is also working on themselves. So there's this balance. You do absolutely need to focus on yourself, but you have to have enough of a conversation going on about what's going on so that both people are doing that. And the place where the relationships fail, and some do, is when one partner stays in denial and says, it's not important for me to change. And denial is what causes the divorce, not the ADHD. ADHD, you can manage ADHD. You can get coaching. You can get treatment. You can do all the things you need to do. But you can't do anything if your partner stays in denial and doesn't take on their part of the problems.
And so now I'm going to come in. It comes to attention. You can't force people to change what they're attention to. It's literally a choice, in my opinion. And so you can tell people, you should look at this. You should pay attention to that. You should pay attention to that. It works really good when there's trust and you have younger kids, but as we grow older, that becomes more difficult. And coaching is a lot about creating environments and tools to help a person discover it. And to own it really is to kind of discover it. And, Melissa, with what I've learned in our conversations, skimming through the books and some other things, a lot of, I think, my summation is a lot of things when you're pulling everybody together and you're doing these group types of things, it's a group setting, and it's a process of discovery where people begin to discover that if they're going to control this, they need to kind of start with themselves. That's my feeling on it, because if you're a spouse and you want to move this thing forward and your partner's there, the more you tell them they need to do it like that, it's almost like it's like me telling my teenager, he's not going to do it just because I said it. But it's a process of putting yourself in to kind of discover it. Can you correct me on anything I'm off on that, at least from your perspective?
Yeah, no, I'm not going to correct it. I'm actually going to make it more complicated, though, which is to say that once you've been in a relationship where one partner has decided that they don't trust, if you're in a parent-child thing and the parent partner decides they don't trust the ADHD partner to be able to discover those things because they've had an experience where they say, well, gee, you know, you've done this thing over and over and over again. Of course, the doing it over and over and over again is ADHD symptoms, not willpower and, you know, they don't like you or something. And so it gets very complicated, and it's very hard for non-ADHD partners to trust, to find a way to communicate how important this is without trying to force the ADHD partner. And the more they try to force the ADHD partner, typically the more resistance they get from that partner because it's yet another form of control, and they're resisting that.
And we're kind of back in that negatives kind of spiral, going the opposite direction where we want to go. So,
another good reason to get educated about all of this so that you can get out of that.
So. Melissa, anything – I'm sure we could go on for a couple hours, but any key things that we haven't addressed that you think would be helpful for our listeners at this point?
Well, I always like to reinforce for people that there is a lot of positive. I mean, again, by the time people find me, typically they're in pretty bad shape. But there really is a lot of positive in terms of once you get the relationship rebalanced, there is a lot that complementary partners can offer each other. There is a lot of energy and vitality that ADHD brings. As somebody once said, you know, my life is never boring because I'm married to a person with ADHD, and that's completely true. So, you know, it's really worth pursuing this, even if you're feeling kind of hopeless right at the moment, to see whether or not, in fact, with hard work and optimizing treatment and all that good stuff, you also can turn your relationship around. I've seen many couples totally surprise themselves and be able to do so. So I encourage people to give it a try and learn what they can learn from it and see if they can improve things.
You just said something that I'm compelled, all of a sudden it just set a firestorm, and you said hard work. And
yeah.
When you hear the word hard work, people like to quantify that because it's like, I've been doing a lot of hard work, and I heard one time that the power of a relationship is very much you can't replace history. And I know this is, my wife and I have been married for 24 years this summer, and we've got archives of stuff and blah, 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 and is it worth salvageable? There's a history there that if you can write that ship that's very rich and very robust, and I mean, there's 25, 26 years of our lives that I wouldn't necessarily want to throw away, because as you grow older, there's a Jimmy Buffett song that I like. Now they're asking me how things are. Pretty soon they're going to be asking me how things were. And I do think as you grow older, you begin to reflect on that stuff. And, you know, my vision of you know, being an old fart sitting in the old folks' home is to sit there and watch all the pictures and videos and relive my life and to share it with the person that I built it with. And so that's just my thoughts and my opinion out there. But so often we begin to think of the work and what's it kind of worth. And to me, there's this history. And when you're in the sunset of your life and you need to sit back and relive and view what's kind of taking place, that history can be very, very powerful and very satisfying. So those are just some editorial comments, at least on my side, because I think that sometimes you get overwhelmed. It's not worthwhile. But I do think that there's probably something there that's kind of worth salvaging. So with that, Melissa, any final comments?
Yeah. I mean, as you say, I could go on for a long time, but I think that might be a good place to stop, if you don't mind. And
yep.
It's a wonderful topic. There's a lot here, and I just encourage people to really delve into it, because your history, if in fact you have a history that you don't appreciate, your future does not need to look like your past.
Yep.
Your future can be a lot more positive than that if you get things under control.
Well said. So with that, everybody, Melissa, thank you so much for coming on the show. To learn more about her, to get her books, go to ADHDmarriage.com. And with that, Melissa, thank you so much for coming on the show.
It is my pleasure.
All right, everybody, catch us next week for another great edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.